order. For the record, let's show that all board members are present. Mr. Trotter, can you lead us in the pledge, please?
I'd be privileged.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag
of the United States of America.
United States of America.
And to the Republic.
To the Republic.
For which it stands. One nation. Under God.
Under God.
Indivisible. With liberty and justice for all.
And justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Trotter. Announcements of action taken in closed session. By unanimous vote, the board approved the 2021 superintendent evaluation instrument and goal. Comments from board members. Trustee Davis.
Yes, good evening. The only thing I wanted to bring up was I thought the superintendent did a great job in getting out the information on the flu shot locations in the area. I went to CVS, and there was no wait. It was just a matter of walking up and getting an appointment, and I was in and out of there within, I want to say, 20 minutes. As we're hearing about this pandemic, as it moves into the fall, the flu is a double indemnity for people who may have those issues of having a weaker immune system. Every time I turn on the TV, what they're saying is get your flu shot. It will protect you. It will protect your neighbors. So that's the one thing I really want to emphasize, and I really appreciate the superintendent putting that information out there, and certainly hope everybody pays attention to that. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Davis. I'm going to back up. There is an item I just read before we started this. To all our listeners joining by phone tonight, please note that you will be muted for the majority of the meeting. If you would like to unmute yourself to participate in the discussion, please press star 6 on your phone. Please note that the meeting host may mute or unmute you during the meeting and that a customer on your phone will know when that happens. Thank you. Okay. Trustee Bloom, any more comments?
No comments tonight.
Trustee Allison.
I just want to say I got a lot of comments from teachers about negotiations and the amount of work that they're being required to do, and I really want to thank Mr. Gant for explaining to me all the requirements that the state is making the districts go through, and I really appreciate that the district seems to be really trying hard to cut down on the amount of work that the teachers are doing, and I really hope this progresses forward so that the teachers in the district can finally have a contract on this or have a MOU. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Fleury.
Yes, we're living in very perilous times now, and it's a time that everybody needs to come together to try to work. There's just so many things going on in our neighborhood and around us and around the world. We've never seen times like this. It's really a tough time we're living in. It takes a lot of people to make it work. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Scott.
Yes, also, I would just like to say that I know that we're going through a very difficult time with the pandemic, the fire, the distant learning, the extra work that the teachers are going through. And I just want to say that we're all in this together and that we're trying to make things work that we have never had to go through before. We've never experienced this, none of us. And I just ask for us, one of us, to try to be with another and to try to find something positive with all the things that we're going through to look forward to. Just stay positive. We're going to get through this, and we're going to get through this all together. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Crawford.
Respect to all the firefighters out there that are literally battling a state that's on fire.
my respect and best wishes to all of you firefighters. That's all.
Thank you. Again, I would like to commend all of our stakeholders that work on our district's proposed pandemic school reopening plan, particularly the health and safety recommendations that follow the state and local health protocols. I want to thank the district for implementing the safety protocols at our district site now that there are more teachers and staff at those sites. I also want to applaud all the employees that are adhering to these protocols for the safety of all of us. You are part of the solution to helping slow the spread of COVID-19. If there are employees out there that are not following the safety protocols to make it safer for all of us, you are part of the problem in helping slow the spread of COVID-19. And I would urge you to follow the protocols. Thank you. Opportunity for employee organizations to address the board. Marysville Unified Teachers Association.
Good evening. My name is Angela Stiegel. I'm the president of the Marysville Unified Teachers Association. For those of you who are not accustomed to working closely with someone who always knows this piece of information, I'll tell you. Today was the 19th day of the school year. That may not sound like much, but in all actuality, it is. As a matter of fact, it is already time for report cards and progress reports. And in those 19 days, teachers have not received a bit of relief or respite. Instead of our jobs becoming any easier or our workday becoming any shorter, our jobs have only become harder and our professional workday even longer. Last week, MUTA filed a very standard demand to bargain the impacts and effects of the new daily participation and weekly engagement reporting requirements, as well as a grievance on a number of issues, the most critical and pressing of which is the profound and severely distressing professional workday that is far and above the 7-hour and 40-minute maximum in our contract. To be clear, we were not trying to be contentious. We were simply trying to protect and assist our members. Anytime a new protocol, practice, role, or responsibility is placed on teachers, it is MUTA's job to bargain the impacts and effects of such. It is what many may refer to as standard operating procedure. Also, anytime our contract is being violated, especially to the degree it was and is, it is our job to file a grievance and work with the district to resolve the issue or issues. In an effort to ensure these actions in this unprecedented time were not viewed as contentious, I personally contacted the assistant superintendent to discuss the fact that our bargaining chairperson would be emailing both the demand to bargain and the grievance. Last Thursday, the MUTA bargaining team met with the district's bargaining team, which once again included the district's Far From Free lawyer. We thought we would easily get through the demand to bargain, since we were very cognizant and considerate of the fact that the reporting requirements were rooted in a state mandate, and we had some input during a meeting with Mr. Greco the week before, as the district was developing their plan to deal with this mandate. Our main, or much bigger issue, was the grievance that we wanted and needed to resolve. However, after 8 hours of bargaining that went just past 9 p.m. and only dealt with the reporting requirements, it was painfully obvious that the district had zero interest in providing any relief to the overworked, exhausted, downtrodden educators of this district. After a back-and-forth Q&A-type discussion with Mr. Greco that we thought went relatively well, one in which the lawyer was not included, and one where we thought the district and Mr. Greco were going to look into a few things and we would come back to discuss further actions or steps or changes, we were informed by legal, in no uncertain terms, that the district would not do anything along those lines or any other lines until they had a written proposal from us. Although we were shocked by this very sudden turn of events, we agreed to do so. And during a caucus, we prepared a more than fair proposal that would still meet the state's mandate and provide some clarity and relief to our teachers. We even left items off our proposal because we understood there were still some things that the district could not change at that moment, and there was information the district simply did not have yet, nor do any districts. When the district returned with their counterproposal, however, it looked like a crime scene. There was so much red ink and crossouts.
The district wasn't even willing to make the simplest of changes in order to help their teachers in the smallest of ways. To add insult to injury, when we attempted to address our very lengthy and critical grievance regarding our contractual workday that is consistently and overwhelmingly beyond 7 hours and 40 minutes a day, the district's lawyer informed us that, contrary to customary practice, we would have to write up and describe all aspects of our grievance, along with all possible remedies we seek on the matter, in order for the district to consider our informal grievance. Mind you, this is a grievance that would take hours for us to explain in writing. Normally, an informal grievance is dealt with and resolved through face-to-face meetings and discussions, or maybe even a phone call or two, not an exchange of typed-up proposals and counterproposals. The bargaining team believes the district is using this tactic in an attempt to discourage or even prevent us from pursuing the grievance, and therefore allow the district to do absolutely nothing to decrease our workload and get our workday back within contractual limits. So I'm sorry, but the district's message that they understand it is hard right now appears to be nothing but lip service meant to placate the masses. I realize I've mentioned the seemingly endless workday of teachers a number of times in this message, so I thought it might be helpful for the board and maybe even the district to hear what a day in the life of an MJUSD teacher is like right now. Because as one of my students recently stated in a class discussion, people don't know what they don't know. So here's my day last Friday. After 4 hours of sleep, I awoke to a phone call at 6:30 in the morning asking for some technology assistance. And after 30 minutes of tech support, for which I am not trained, I hurriedly prepared for and headed to work, since I'm trying to teach from my classroom in an effort to feel more like I'm in class and to stay away from my refrigerator, to be honest. Once at school, I was asked for more tech support and assistance, as well as yet another quick tech tip or two before classes started at 8 a.m. From 8 until approximately 12:15, I conducted class discussions via Zoom, posted info, reminders, assignments, and more for my classes, and responded to at least 2 phone calls, 9 text messages, 4 questions in the stream of 3 Google Classrooms, and 5 emails. From around 12:15 to approximately 1 p.m., I trained a couple of teachers on Flipgrid and Jamboard. Afterwards, I responded to student questions, emails, and requests for help, including, of course, some more tech support and how to convince a parent that his son was really doing work online and not goofing off. After that, I answered questions via text, email, and phone regarding the new reporting requirements until nearly 2:30. At 2:30, I attended a voluntary virtual staff meeting in regards to the weekly engagement log. This lasted until just a few minutes after 3 p.m. As that meeting wrapped up, I discovered that I had a pressing department chair issue that needed my immediate attention. Nearly as soon as that issue was resolved, my assistance was needed again, both on the part of students and teachers, and for a number of issues, including how and when to pick up books, a handful of Jamboard or tech tutorials, Aerie's gradebook printout how-tos, and the like. I left MHS just after 4:30 p.m. on a Friday before a 3-day weekend. During the trip to the grocery store, I continued to provide curriculum and tech assistance until around 7 p.m. via my personal cell phone. After arriving home at approximately 9 p.m., I put in at least 2 more hours on my computer prepping for my classes for the coming week. So all in all, my professional workday consisted of approximately 14 hours on Friday, which is most definitely beyond the 7-hour and 40-minute contractual maximum. And here's the thing. Friday was not an anomaly, and I am not an anomaly. All of your students are working like this. And let's keep in mind that this is just my teaching job. That doesn't include the hours I spend as a passionate advocate for the educators and students of the district, or the hours I am blessed to spend as a daughter, wife, and sister. This also doesn't include the time I spend or the sleep I lose beating myself up and questioning exactly how good or bad of a job I am doing at all or any of these tasks or commitments. I implore you, our school board members, to please not patronize us with a superficial, "we know how you feel," because you don't. I implore you for once to listen to the teachers in this district, to listen to the professional educators who are begging you for help. direct the district to conduct bargaining and grievance handling without time-consuming paperwork and without unnecessary and extremely expensive personnel who have no real vested interest in settling anything in a timely or collaborative manner. Direct or even demand that the district work with union leadership to implement changes that will decrease the tremendous workload and pressure that teachers are under. Keep your word and provide the professional development that you promised teachers when you ignored our pleas and passed resolutions over the summer. All in all, what we're asking is for our board members to stand up for the amazing, dedicated, exhausted teachers who are asking for your help. Help you can and should and must provide before you lose a large contingency of them. Thank you.
Thank you, Angela. Operating engineer at Local Union Number 3. California School Employees Association Number 326 and 648. Association of Management and Confidential Employees.
Hi, good evening. So tonight, AMACE would just like to welcome a new member and take this opportunity to introduce our new Coordinator of Innovation and Educational Technology. This person is someone who's been with Marysville Joint Unified since 2005, and they've taught at both the junior high and elementary levels. They've been a teacher on special assignment with us before, working on technology grants. They've been an educator for over 22 years, and I think most people in the district have already received help in the technology field from this person. So with that, we'd like to take a moment to introduce Alicia Wright as our new technology coordinator. And I think Alicia is online. I don't think she's been called out to help evacuation yet. So welcome, Alicia.
Yay, Alicia. Hi, Alicia. How are you doing? This is Paul.
Alicia, are you there? Would you like to speak and say a couple words? Alicia, on your phone, hit star 6, please. I saw your name earlier. Or looking for that, I do want to say thank you, Alicia, that the information that was sent out on August 31st was amazing, your videos you have.
It looks like she's on, but I'm not able to unmute her. She has to have
star 6, Alicia.
And she may have jumped off of line. I know she's on the search and rescue up there, and she knew at any moment she might be getting called out to go help with the evacuations. And from one of the notes that I just got, she might have just headed that way. So, as always, she's out helping somebody.
Yes, thanks, Rocco. This is Jeff. Yeah, I just received notice that there are more evacuations just starting in the foothills. They're now evacuating down around Forbestown area.
Wow, yeah. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Mr. Greco. Public comment.
I just talked to Greco. I didn't know. Can I just go back for a second here, please? Mr. Greco, Dr. Greco, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here, Susan.
Yes, the new person that you have brought on board, Alicia Wright, can you just give me a little bit of her responsibilities and what she will be able to do to help with the teachers at this point in time?
Yeah,
if
so,
you can.
Yeah, well, there's going to be several things for this position. So one of the first ones will be coordinating what we're going to be calling technology innovators. So based on some of the funding and stuff we'll talk later in LCAP with, what we're going to be doing is setting up supplemental agreements to have basically a lead teacher or someone who's very good at outreach with the technology at each of the sites. So Alicia Position 1 will be coordinating these teachers to be able to assist families.
What she will be able to do. Pardon me?
Sorry.
Hello?
You there?
Do you have a question, Susan?
Pardon me?
Mr. Greco is explaining her duties.
Yes.
Go ahead, Mr. Greco.
So part of the duties will be to establish the health videos, routines to be able to assist parents and students. So we'll have teachers working with her from each site on stipend to be able to support the families. That's one of the things we saw through LCAP survey. The other thing will be right now, as we're trying to pull together resources, there's just so much. We're going to have somebody in-house who's essentially going to be coordinating with our teachers. Right now, we get superficial survey. We get data as we can get it. This gives us somebody from the teaching ranks, somebody who has been living this for the last 19 days, who has a good knowledge of the technology to be able to start working with teachers to find out what's working for them, what's not working, and hopefully help us to improve the pedagogy across all of our classrooms, which will hopefully streamline behaviors and streamline work for teachers to hopefully decrease that workload, because we do understand the importance of having mental health, good quality mental health, not just for our students, but for our teachers and for everybody in this situation. So she's going to be working on the technology side to hopefully bring together the resources and provide those to teachers in a way that will hopefully make this a little bit easier on everybody and improve student learning throughout the process.
And you did say decrease workload. Is that correct?
We're trying, Susan, yes.
Thank you so very much. That's what I wanted to hear.
Any other questions, comments? I would say if you want to see some of her work, Dr. Greco sent out an email on August 31st that had some of her training videos on there. So I would recommend that you go back and take a look at those.
Thank you.
Public comments. For teleconference meetings, please submit public comment cards located on the district webpage at www.mjusd.com under board before the board meeting begins. Persons wishing to address the board are requested to fill out a public comment card before the start of the meeting and give it to the secretary, board president, or superintendent. Public may address topics not on the agenda during this section of the agenda or ask may be heard during a specific agenda item. Comments are limited to a maximum of 3 minutes per speaker, 20 minutes total time for public input on each item per board bylaw 9323. The Ralph and Brown Act prevents the Board of Trustees from responding to these comments with the exception of clarifying questions. The California Government Code Section 54954.2.A states no action or discussion will be undertaken on any item not appearing on the posted agenda, except that members of the legislative body or staff may briefly respond to statements made or questions posed by persons exercising their public testimony right under Section 54954.3. So we do have some agenda or public comments. Just to carry on, can you be our timer? To us. Our first one is from Jennifer Rochelle. Jennifer Rochelle there?
I do not see her.
So there is a topic or an email that was sent with the public comment, so I'll go ahead and read that. The topic, reopening of MJUSD, specifically Foothill Intermediate. We want the school to reopen as normal while providing the option to do independent studies or for any who are uncomfortable with returning to school. I feel it is hurting our kids and society far more by either doing distance learning or trying to resume school with so many regulations. The best thing for our kids is to resume school as usual. Okay, the next series of public comments are dealing with teacher workload and professional work day. So all of these will be lumped into that category for a 20-minute time limit. Our first public comment is by Mr. Ryan Wallace. Mr. Wallace, are you there?
All right, I'm here. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah,
thank you so much. I know I have three minutes. Thank you, everyone. To be honest, when I submitted my public forum card last night, it was more of an impulse, just because there's so much that's going on, and there's so much that's really on my heart and a lot of what we're talking about and everything. So just to start, I really, when hearing from the previous speaker in her email saying about school starting up in normal, there is so much that has to happen, I know, for us to open up back normal. But being a math teacher and also the activities director and the leadership advisor, I get a daily basis feedback of students wanting just to be back. And I know that there's so much stuff that is going on and that there's restrictions and everything. But these students, they're just like, they want to be back so bad. I was checking in on one of my students that I had last year, very hardworking student, and I just randomly checked Aries, and she's failing half of her classes. And I don't know if it's because she's not doing her work, if there's Wi-Fi problems. I didn't really have a script for this because I just want to speak from the heart. And so anyway, I just wanted to also chime in to say, even though I know it could be hard, reopening school will probably solve over half of our problems. And I heard that Lincoln and Rockland are planning on doing it later on this month. I don't know the validity of that by chance. And so anyway, I want to thank everyone for their time. And at the very end of the day, to conclude before my 3 minutes are up, I do want to say it is still truly about all of our students. I know we as adults are going over a lot of stuff. What is the best that we can do for our students, either distance learning, teachers are stressed, students are stressed. They ask me, Mr. Wallace, why is so-and-so stressed all the time? They're usually not like this. And it's a combination of either workload or just not knowing what the future is going to hold. So anyway, I don't really have like a specific question or anything. I did just want to kind of speak my mind. Teachers are working as hard as possible. I know everyone is as hard as possible, but we cannot lose the fact that it is all truly about student success. And are we doing that right now? So thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Wallace. Next, we have Mr. Donald Fry. Mr. Fry?
All right, we're back on here. So most of you know me. I'm Don Fry. I've been with the district now for 25 years. And I'm going to quickly address, I keep hearing from the district that there are a lot of things happening from the state, and we're all aware of those. But a lot of things are happening are totally within the control of the district, and there's nothing that's being done to solve those things. The district is going beyond the mandatory 240 minutes that's required by the state. They're requiring intervention in the afternoon, taking time away from teachers. Once again, totally in control of the district. We told the district when we were in negotiations that already the teachers' workloads were 10 to 12 hours at a minimum during the last time, and that we need to leave that time open in the afternoon. But the district, through their lawyer, Mr. Gant, decided that, no, we need to be micromanaged to be told what to do with all of our time. And so what's happening is right now I just stopped grading some report cards and spending 10, 12, or more hours a day going through and trying to get this done. Once again, there's no reason for the classes in the afternoon except that the superintendent wanted to have it that way. Once again, not a state mandate, totally within the control of the district, trying to micromanage the way teachers do things. And as we came up with different solutions, once again, we have Mr. Gant there, who I'm glad he wasn't on a Titanic, because if they would have been asking for pumps because the ship is sinking, he'd say, well, the paperwork's not filled out. We can't allow you to have that until all the paperwork's done. Once again, we're trying to work collaboratively and get things done. However, it seems like it's more important that all that paperwork is done. Okay, I just gave you a really easy solution to break up a lot of time out of there. Totally within control of the district. And it seems like all we're getting from the superintendent's office is that we can't do anything because the state is making us do this or that. Yet I just told you something right there, several hours, total control of the district, total your decision, and yet I'm being told over and over again that as these problems come up, that they're totally not within our control. I think it's time for us to start looking at ways we can actually cut teacher workloads. There are several ways we've proposed as the association, there's also several ways that we've discussed, and yet it doesn't appear at the district level that they want to make any changes or that they understand the severity or the amount of hours that teachers are working. So once again, I really think that if you're going to be in charge, you need to be in charge. I mean, if you look back at what happened this last Friday, we sent out a message out to all these teachers from the district about all these new requirements, and guess what happened? The administrators weren't answering the phone calls, weren't answering their emails. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Price. Next, we have Linda Spring. Is Linda there?
Hi, this is Linda Strang. I just want to illuminate some of the current distance learning issues. I was told I'd use the same lesson for thumb drive kids, internet kids without Zoom, and Zoom kids for all those students. This is not quality teaching, and it does not build those meaningful relationships I've asked to do. I currently prep for 14 sections, and I have worked up to 18 hours in a day and still felt like I wasn't caught up. I've been told it's only one or three or eight extra pages, but we are drowning in paperwork. Currently, I'm supposed to document special education contacts in two different locations. Why? Why is that more important than quality teaching? I've been told students not attending class are struggling students so that I must call them. I don't understand how that's not an attendance issue. I've been told paperwork must be signed in blue ink and hand-delivered to our site. Why can't I sign it in blue ink, scan it, email it, and the school staff can print it with a color printer, and you will have your nice blue signature? A few comments I've heard from other teachers who are not at the board meeting because they're still teaching or doing paperwork, are the district does not care about our workload. I am completely drained. I spent the weekend on attendance and other paperwork. How does this promote quality teaching? So I'm requesting that you, as the board, direct Mr. Cena to find a way to give teachers some relief. We are stressed. We are tired. And we cannot continue at this pace. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Strang. Next, we have Ms. Tammy Strobini. Tammy?
Yes, I thank you, members of the board. There's no tired like teacher tired. This is a meme that came out long before the COVID crisis turned our lives upside down. This meme came out long before the expectations placed upon teachers as a result of distance learning. Now I can only imagine having that kind of energy once again. My contract says, as it has for a few years now, that my workday should be 7 hours and 40 minutes long. In 29 years of teaching, putting a bit of extra into each workday is common practice, but that was work I was familiar with and comfortable with. Fast forward to this year, and the expectations are relentless. Before I leave my house each morning, I'm posting comments on Google Stream and checking for messages from my students or possibly emails from school. And upon arriving at school, there's multiple face-to-face interactions with students trying to teach content while attempting to troubleshoot technology that I really don't understand myself. Then it's making contact with students who need to return for some intervention and once again trying to troubleshoot technology issues on my side of things because, oh, I don't know, Go Guardian is down, I can't access Google, maybe the entire internet's down. All of those things have happened already this year. Answering student messages, responding to parent emails, it all has to happen and in a pretty timely manner. Next thing I know, my contracted 7 hours and 40 minutes is up, but am I finished with my day? Oh, not quite. There's still assignments to grade. There's weekly engagement logs to write, grade books to update, and I can't forget to actually plan my content for the next day. That usually includes searching for just the right lesson that can work digitally to get across the information I need. Am I finished there? Oh, nope. Once I find what I need, I have to assign and upload everything into my Google Classroom in order to be ready for the upcoming live interaction. There is no tired like distance teaching tired. When our bargaining team began mentioning the SB 98 state mandated minimum minutes, knowing then that the workload that was going to be placed on the teachers, the response from the district lawyer seemed more accusatory than anything, making us feel that if we created a schedule that only reflected minimum minutes, then we as teachers would only do the bare minimum for our students. I really took offense to that even before truly understanding the amount of time that distance learning was going to entail. Now thinking back on that accusation, I'm frustrated and enraged. Your teachers are working on average 10 hours a day trying to adhere to schedules that didn't have to be as written, abiding to state guidelines that don't have to be as time-consuming, and trying to be the best educator they can under the less-than-ideal circumstances. Something has to give. Some burden must be lifted from your teacher's shoulders. I need to be able to go home just one day and not be teacher tired. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Next, we had a public comment by Wendy Ramirez, and it was one of the emails that was sent to the board members, and I'll read that. I am thoroughly disappointed that elementary teachers are being asked to put together an ARE gradebook. In primary grade, the work is formative and helps shape our instruction. We take the work that they have completed and analyze it. We determine who in our classes needs extra support to meet standards. We group those kids together to do small groups in our classrooms. Then we determine who is making mistakes but has the concept down and form a group to clarify these small misconceptions. This work should not be put into a gradebook, as learning is a continual process that is evolving on a daily basis. We build these hard-to-grasp concepts into a spiral review so students get this continual practice and that is reflected on their report card at the end of the trimester. Asking primary teachers to enter this type of data is cumbersome and time-consuming. By voting in ARE's gradebook for K-12 without giving you the time to rebuttal or push these points through has been disheartening. It is extra unnecessary work being pushed on a group of teachers that are already at their breaking point. Not only do we have to be teachers and all that encompasses, we also have to be data clerk, data entry clerk for the state. Why do I have to do additional busy work to my overloaded and mentally tired mind to put meaningless grades into a gradebook and make this all visible to parents so they can feel like their child is a failure and project that onto the child? We have these hard conversations with parents and schedule SST where we make it about the child growing and learning at their own pace. Reiterate that we are a team to develop their mind and come up with solutions together. Gradebooks in elementary school further emphasize that has and have not. Next, we have Amanda Bowman on behalf of Becky Stewart. Amanda, are you there?
I am.
Amanda.
So, like I said, I am reading this for Becky Stewart. So my name is Becky Stewart, and I am honored to call myself the Director of Music at Yuba Gardens Intermediate School. I have always taken much pride in this position, and I love sharing my passion for music education with students every day. And I thank the school board for still granting space for visual and performing arts during distance learning. It is absolutely vital that students have a viable creative outlet during this time. As a band and choir director, I am no stranger to extra hours. I usually end up dragging my entire administration and other school staff to band field trips on Saturdays throughout the year, and they do it with a smile on their face because we're giving the kids a once-in-a-lifetime experience. And I am relatively new to the profession, starting my sixth year, so I remember the stress and hours involved in planning during my first years. However, distance learning is far surpassing that. I have to put in three times as much work to slightly even compare to the experience that students would normally receive in my classroom. And again, I already put in an exuberant amount of hours and stress to make our music department one of the best in Northern California. And as a band director, I am used to having to wear 60 different hats throughout the school year. But this year, I feel like it's double. Every day, I work at least 10 hours to create content for our students that is of high quality and rigor, grade their submissions, give individualized, specific feedback, track their assignments and attendance, make calls home, offer tech support, and come up with new and creative ways to engage them in instruction every day so that they're still excited to come to school. I love my career, and I love music education, but the tracking requirements that have been tasked upon all teachers is far beyond what our contract warrants. I know everybody is suffering during the unprecedented times. However, the full load should not fall on educators' backs. And if it does have to fall on educators' backs, there should be modifications made to our schedule and our content. Again, thank you so much for your continued support of music education in MJUSD. Go YG.
Thank you very much, Amanda, for Becky Stewart. And that was our last public comment card. Next up, Mr. Seaman. Together, serving every student every day in every way. On August 25th, we talked about how right then and there we were fresh off information from TDE, and then we were engaging that week in this new attendance and weekly engagement requirements and developing a plan and communicating that plan. As you've heard tonight, and the struggle that we are all working through to try to meet those standards and do it in the most efficient, effective, and easiest way possible. We will continue to work on that. And I appreciate the advanced workload and the courage and the patience and the professionalism with which teachers are demonstrating working through this, while not only working through attendance and weekly engagement logs, but all the other challenges that we're facing. I truly believe that all of this COVID incoming stuff is soon we're going to have our all of our stuff on the table, and we'll be able to work on it and refine and make it so that we're providing the most effective service for students. The next thing that on our journey is specialized targeted student support. And how we provide services to special ed, English language arts, students who don't have access to the internet. And in fact, tomorrow we're starting some one-on-one in-person assessment with EL students. And we're working toward next week, if the heavens allow us, to start at Yuba Feather and Bobbin schools providing access to third and through sixth graders at Yuba Feather and to Marysville High School students at Dobbins for having the ability to access internet for families that have no means of connecting with the internet. We're hoping that soon as possible we'll be able to provide service starting one-on-one with special ed students. And that this opens the way to our foster youth and our homeless students and our students that are at risk. All of this within the challenges of daily direct contacts, positive COVID-19, and constantly learning, getting used to the habits, and demonstrating the health and safety protocols. And now also the public power safety shutdowns and the evacuations. And so tonight, at this board meeting, September 8th, that moving our purpose, our collective purpose, is to prevent the spread of COVID-19, to ensure the health and safety of our students and staff, to maintain relationships, and to facilitate student learning. Tonight,
Dr. Rocco Greco will present our LCAP, our Learning Continuity and Achievement Plan, and how we're using our resources to address particular needs, particularly of students who have the greatest needs. Also, our Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts will also present, Mr. Tim Malone will present that LCAP. And Ms. Penny Lossing will share our unaudited actuals, so we'll get a look at what our budget looks like, and I hope you'll see there's some positive news there. We've been working forward and trying to supply resource to our purpose. And Greg Eichmann, the Eichmann Advisors, will be here to talk about how we're going to look at refinancing our COPS payment. Again, saving some money, taking advantage of low interest rates. And then also, SiteLogic is here tonight to present a plan for facilitating improvements for energy conservation, energy generation, and management systems. So some positive things happening, looking forward, while we work together amid extreme heat, the daily challenges of distance learning, smoke, wildfires, health and safety protocols, COVID-19, connectivity issues, our attendance, weekly engagement logs, in-person instruction and service to targeted students. And all of this is exacerbated by the fact that we can't come in contact with each other, we can't embrace each other, we can't congregate, and that's part of what's just making people feel what we hear tonight. And in all this, also hear people talking about that if we can work together, if we can stay positive, and again, I just want to thank people for their courage and their professionalism as together we work together to serve every student every day in every way.
Thank you, Mr. Cena. Next, we have the approval of minutes. Minutes from the regular board meeting of 8:25:20. Is there any discussion regarding the minutes? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
I'll second that, Susan Scott.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Mather. Trustee Davis?
Mr. Davis, star 6 on your phone, please.
Press star 6 on your phone, Mr. Davis. Mr. Davis? We'll come back to Trustee Davis. Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Osmond?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crawford?
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Trustee Davis, can you hear? You need to unmute your phone, Mr. Davis. Trustee Davis, can you hit star 6?
Actually, we lost his picture, too. Yeah, I see that. His audio was over phone. I see that his video is turned off as well.
Okay, Trustee Davis is absent. Motion carries 6 yes. We're going to see if we can get Mr. Davis back attached. Trustee Davis, are you there?
Yes, I'm sorry. Everything went dead. I voted yes for the past agenda minutes.
Okay. Well, we've already completed that, Trustee Davis, so we're going to move on to the consent agenda.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Are there any items on the consent agenda that the board member would like to have pulled? If not, is there a motion?
Motion to approve the consent agenda.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second. This is
second by Renta Davis. Give it to Fleury.
Second by Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bones.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Aye.
Trustee Rasmussen. Yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Next we have new business. New business, educational service, resolution 2020-21-07, the availability of textbooks and instructional materials. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board to set a public hearing to approve the resolution on the availability of textbooks and instructional materials for the 2021 school year. If there's no objection from board members, we're going to set the public hearing date for September 22, 2020. Okay, public hearing is set. Number two, district learning continuity plan. Purpose of the agenda item. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to review the district learning continuity and attendance plan. Learning continuity plan. Public hearing is now open. Dr. Greco?
Okay, I'm going to share a screen. Does everybody see the screen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So this is our public hearing for the LCAP for this year. And realistically, this LCAP is different than ones in the past, and we'll talk about that briefly. What we're doing here is allocating the CARES fund, and we'll explain what those are. Every stakeholder should have received a video explaining this LCAP process and then a chance to participate with a survey before this. And so hopefully everyone had a chance to see that. But I just wanted to briefly kind of explain where we're at with the LCAP this year. So normally our LCAP is what we call our local control and accountability plan, and it's the district's financial plan. It illustrates how our resources are being used to meet our goals equitably. This year, the LCAP has been suspended. So we started into this LCAP process last year, and they've changed the process on us several times as we've been going along. So you guys got an operational report at the beginning of the summer. This is the follow-up that will carry us through the end of this year before we start into the next actual three-year LCAP cycle. So while the district, or while the document was suspended, the district's underlying goals towards quality instruction still persist. So funds to schools from the state were heavily cut, and then they were backfilled as what we called the CARES Act funds. So this year's funds, or the plan, is called the Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan. So ironically, it's also LCAP, because they didn't figure that would be confusing in any way, shape, or form. And it represents how these funds are going to be spent and establishes priorities on how we would spend these funds. So the Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan, it's a key part of the overall budget package that brought stability and saved us from having massive cuts this year as were originally set by the state when the first budgets came out. And these were all adopted by the governor and legislature under Senate Bill 98, which I know you guys hear a lot about. So our LCAP priorities that came from the state is the learning continuity. It memorializes the planning and process. So normally we begin to ask before we start to write. In this process, because everything's moving fast, you begin to plan, and then you get feedback on what people find valuable or where you want to make adjustments in that plan as you're moving forward. So in this plan, the idea was to address the needs of unduplicated students. And so these would be our students who are foster, EL, special population, special education, being able to provide access to necessary devices and connectivity. Obviously, you can't learn from home if there's no connection to the school. Providing resources and supports to address student and staff mental health and social emotional well-being. Continuing to provide school meals for students, conducting meaningful stakeholder engagement, maintaining transparency through this process, and then addressing gaps that are occurring in the learning. And so from before, from when we started our old LCAP, this is kind of an overview of the district. So district sits about 87.3% graduation rate from the last set of data, which would now end up being almost 2 years old. And this was above state average. We do have students who are behind in English and math still. We employ about 1,300 folks and have just under 10,000 students in our district schools. So the goals that we started, there was three goals in the original LCAP, and we had moved to differentiate into five as we started. So this is from our full LCAP, not the learning continuity plan right now. But we thought that these goals also still needed to be preserved as we move forward through this year. So the first goal was to improve academic performance by creating a system of structures that address and engage the various identified needs of all students. Goal two was to improve the physical and emotional condition of MJUSD schools to address the needs of the whole student. Goal three was to build a system of additional identified supports for our EL, foster, and homeless students. Four was to improve the meaningful connection of the school-to-home relationship to facilitate academic and SEL growth of students. And five was to decrease employee turnover by creating policies and practices supporting the well-being of staff. And then COVID happened. So up into this point in the stakeholder process, we had increased feedback from the year before. So we were up to 490 total stakeholders that were engaged, with about 876 total comments coming in that process. So since then, we've had a lot of feedback to go into this plan. So we started with remote educator surveys right after this got started. And you can kind of see through the different surveys, I believe we are over 10,000 survey results at this point. This most recent survey that went up had another 304, and there's still some paper-based responses coming in. And I'm going to share a little bit of that with you. So the expenditures that we're looking at, so the district identified the following gaps in order to be able to get through COVID or be able to offer hybrid or distance learning. So the first was health and safety, professional development, digital curriculum, learning loss remediation tools. We needed to look at staffing, technology, and then our mental health and counseling programs. So on this last survey, the 300 or so folks that have filled it out, we basically asked, these are the expenditures that we've spent money on, and this will come up a little bit bigger later on the slide so you can see it. But I just wanted to give you a breakdown that when people looked at it in general, if you look down this first column, most people felt the where we've placed the dollars are where they needed to be. Some of the lower ones, I think, are ones that are probably a little less understood, or it could just be that they're not as useful yet. But some of our learning loss remediation tools, and then this, if you disaggregated it to the foothills and down, you'd probably find a difference between the importance of paper consumables. But otherwise, everything has a very high rating as to where we've placed the dollars at this point. This just shows that the survey results right now are coming from a mix of employees and parents and families. We've had a few students and then community members as well. And this is probably way too small to see on your screen, is just that same data as before. This is for each of the expenditures, how many people felt it was valuable. So you can see that where people are finding that we spent the dollars is the right area for right now. Some recommendations that we took away from this survey, and there was some really good feedback in this survey. One was to conduct a survey of students to gain an understanding of how we can better support them. So we've talked a lot to the community and around. So at this point, now that we're 19 days in, it's time to talk to our students and see what's working for them and where are they having issues that we can improve their learning. It came up frequently to improve access to intervention services in the afternoon. So kids who are feeling like, or families that are feeling like their kids need one-on-one or something outside of the general Zoom. Where possible, increase teacher-student virtual in-time person is a comment that came up repeatedly. Create parent support network, and that's one that we talked about earlier tonight that we'll be getting off the ground shortly here. But this is to help parents as they're going through and helping their students at home. Easier access to mental health support. So we have to look at how we're making these available and how we're advertising these for students. So this is something that we'll continue to work on. I put this one because I wanted to show the dichotomy of the experience that people are having. And a lot of this probably depends on the situation. We had just as many requests for, I need my student to get more work, they're not busy enough, to I'm getting so much work that my student is stressed and overwhelmed, they need less. So we'll do some ferreting out on that data and try to figure out where those are coming from and make sure that we try to reach that pedagogical balance for all of our staff. A lot of people were asking for online social activities for students, especially for the younger kids. They mentioned a lot of the school structure isn't just about the learning, it's about the socialization. And if we can't do it physically right now, still providing these building activities for students to get together. And the physical internet hubs, places for kids to be able to come and get the internet, came up repeatedly through the survey as well. So where we're spending the money right now, as you allocate the CARES Act fund, we put about $3 million into technology, Chromebooks, portable devices, technology upgrades, teacher machines. Site technology infrastructure, this would be things like the Wi-Fi routers, things like that that we're finding need to be updated or upgraded with the use level that they're getting. We've allocated $750,000 for connectivity, and so this is for the cellular contract that Director Williams has already set up with T-Mobile and with AT&T, Verizon, as well as Digital Path and some of the other digital providers he's looking at to help in the foothills. $250,000 for PPE at this point, so that's everything from plexiglass to face shields. Sanitization is the next one. So when it comes to staffing, materials, and chemicals, we allocated about $500,000 looking at what costs are. For school nutrition, there's lost revenue, and that's not because of the program. The program is being run excellently. The problem you have is that we get less reimbursement, so they're serving less meals than they were before. But it requires a lot more staffing because of the way we're set up in order to make that happen. So from 1920, there was an $800,000 deficit, and the prediction based on those numbers for last year is a $1.5 million deficit this year. And again, the state predicted that these would be the case, and this was a part of the reason for the CARES Act funds. We kept the Illuminate assessment program at $50,000. We've added, per request of the union and our teachers, Lexia, Mayon, Renaissance, and then ILIT, which are different literacy type programs. So ILIT for our second language or EL students, and then the other ones for reading at the lower grade levels. Digital curriculum additions, we added to the English curriculum at the high schools, the Passport EMC, which gives additional digital tools. Edmentum, so we have ExactPath, which came through part of it tonight. ExactPath is a prescriptive and diagnostic program that allows us to figure out where learning losses occurred with students, and it sets up a prescription for them to work on daily in order to be able to remediate those things. And then the continuation libraries and independent studies libraries in order to be able to have full access courses online for the students while they're out there. We have maintained our counseling at the elementary level, which was $250,000. For curriculum, we've allocated $100,000 to go into mental health tools and curriculum moving forward. We've added the coordinator of innovation and instructional technologies, and that includes pay and benefits, machinery. Computer technology, we've understand that the computer technology department we have is already running short-staffed, and with the need that you've heard from people tonight, needing to have additional tech assistance to be online to be able to help teachers and families and students. So that's $300,000. We have teacher training, and we've upped that. There was 24 hours available, and we're hoping to be able to offer an additional 6 hours of PD on top of the 24 that come in the year at $550,000. We have our parent development network, which is, I mentioned this earlier, this will be what our new coordinator is working with. And this will be setting up resources and utilizing our teaching staff and employees in order to be able to set up a network to help our parents, helping their students. And then working with our classified staff that we've maintained, paraeducators, buses, trainings, in order to help them be able to help us in this very different environment that we're living in right now. Now, real quick at the end of this, this slide doesn't seem to fit with anything. As the state hodgepodges its things together, we normally present math placement as part of the LCAP, and we couldn't get a clear definition as to whether it needed to be done, so I'm going to include it in this because I think it's important information anyways. So when you look at equitable access, what they do is we're going to take our ninth grade placement of math and kind of look across the board at, are we doing this? And so what you're seeing is essentially about 13% of our students are coming in below their foundational year of math before they go to on level. It's pretty proportionate across the board. The one disproportionality I will point out is that our Black or African American students, there's 22% that are in that foundational year as opposed to 13. So there is a discrepancy that we need to look into there and make sure that we're doing better with. And that is the current LCAP as we stand. Any questions?
Do we have any questions or comments from board members?
I guess this is Brandon Davis. Can I, the question I'd have is, with the improvements that we have put in place, what is the expected return? Are we looking for a year, 2 years, 6 months? What would you say is the return on these investments for the kids improving?
I don't even know if you could look at it in those terms at this point. I think that without it, you don't have the possibility to do what we're doing. So just the technology, getting the Chromebooks out, I couldn't say what the net gain would be with that. I would say that our program would be impossible without some of these things. I think that, as you've heard from teachers tonight, everyone is in a state where they're continually having to learn right now, and there's so much going into that. So I think that, if being optimistic, what I would say is, ideally, if we don't lose ground, if we can keep where we're at and continue moving forward, with the goal to push on literacy so that as students return to us physically, we have the ability to remediate gaps quicker, because we know literacy is key to everything. I think if we were to come out just on pace with where we've been in the past, we're doing pretty well at this point.
Thank you very much.
So, Dr. Greco, looking at our continuity plan, it's actually page 14 of 16. You know, has kind of our graph talked about section, description, total funds, contributing, and under contributing it has no or yes. What does no or yes mean, right?
Yeah.
Very first one on page 14, as to provide PPE in the form of masks and that $250,000. But in our graph, it says contributing no.
Right.
Does that mean we're putting money in or not putting money in?
So we'll go back for a second. So when you look normally at LCAP, so the district budget, let's call it $135 million that comes in through our funds with LCAP. In that, we get about $30 million in order to bring up that we get because of unduplicated students. So we get that because of our students who are low income, second language, foster students. And so those students generate additional dollars. For us, that additional set of dollars is about 29.5% of our budget. So it's a big chunk. When they set up the CARES Act funds, the money came in a few little pockets. And so when it says contributing, does it mean, is this a school-wide function? Is this something that's helping everybody? Or is this something that's specifically helping those unduplicated population counts that we gave you these specific dollars for? And so as we begin to do this, when you see the ones that are contributing, these are things like with ILIT or some of the others that are directly going towards helping our unduplicated student counts.
Okay. So when we're talking contributing, it's to our unduplicated students, right?
Correct, specifically. And some of these will get changed as we go through and continue to adjust. So this is the draft plan after tonight's hearing. A final thing we'll go through. But what you're looking for on this, and we were looking for final guidance from the state, is what percent of proportionality. Did it need to be of the whole budget, or was it of just the CARES Act? The most recent that we got was it was the percentage of the CARES Act dollars. So you're looking to basically say, proportionately wise, we normally get this many dollars to affect this specific population. We want to make sure that you're not just going to not support them anymore, that a certain amount of dollars are still going to go to them.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions, comments? Not, I'll entertain a motion to close the public hearing.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Motion by Crawford to close. Is there a second?
Second by Randy Davis.
Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Flurry. Trustee Flurry.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crowder.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen. Yes. Motion carries 7 yes. Number 3, NCAA Learning Continuity Plan. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board hold a public hearing to review the Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts, NCAA Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan, Learning Continuity Plan. Public hearing is now open. Mr. Malone?
Yes, I want to say hello to the board, Gary, and the cabinet. And this is, I'm glad that the district always seems to go first, which is great because we do everything in a real micro version compared to the district. It's very similar as being a dependent charter and part of the district. But so now I'd like to speak a little bit about MCAA's Learning Continuity and Attendance Plan. Now, the only visual I have for you, though, is the plan that you have in your packet, which is found on pages 314 to 332 right after the district's plan. And this is the draft, of course. But and we worked with stakeholders. We've had meetings, and we gleaned some information from the district survey, especially in terms of continuity, connectivity and that kind of thing. But MCAA has identified areas of focus to ensure learning continuity and student attendance during the COVID-19 pandemic. And some of these areas of focus are student internet connectivity. We've been providing hotspots, which the district has helped us with, which has helped improve connectivity for students. We don't really have any students at this time that do not have internet access at all. It's just kind of spotty. We do have student curriculum online resources that we're worried about, technology needs, training and professional development, health and safety of students and staff, and then the social emotional learning curriculum. And now one of the areas the plan asks us to address is continuity of learning with regards to in-person instruction. So the plan's broken down into different areas. And if you look on page 4 of the plan, you'll see this in-person instruction. And we have tables in there. I don't have a nice visual of you, but in the plan we have tables with the actions that we're doing and what we're spending the money on. And you can see that, I think it's page 4 for this one, the beginning one. Let's see. Yeah, page 4, the table begins. And so MCAA's in-person instruction plan is very similar to district's plan. As soon as at least 14 days after Yuba County is removed from the state's COVID-19 watch list, MCAA will reopen for in-person learning. Now, this blended learning model is the same as all the other schools in the district. We will have cohorts and students will attend 2 days per week, just like everybody else in the district. With regards to MCAA's distance learning program, which all students are currently participating in, our plan is very similar to the district's plan. And this is found on page 10 of that little packet I gave you. In order to improve distance learning, MCAA has or will purchase document scanners so that teachers can enhance distance learning for our students. That way, a lot of teachers are working at home, and they can have document readers at home where they can scan different items for the kids to look at. We will purchase laptop computers for teachers that have only desktop computers so that they can take them to go back and forth. We actually have a high percentage of our students that are our teachers that do come into work, though, every day. And then provide extra tutoring help for students struggling in math. We let a guy go, but with this extra CARES Act money, we are able to hire him back and purchase. We also plan on purchasing new Chromebooks in order to replace outdated ones so that all of our students have a computer to use at home. And we also purchased online licenses for Spanish and AP environmental science curriculum so the kids can access this curriculum online. And then this plan also addresses students' learning loss, and this is found on pages 11 through 14 of the plan. One of the actions that MCA teachers will be undertaking is the use of initial assessments to measure the 2019-20 learning loss. And our teachers are pretty good about this after all the PLC training that they've had and the time they've, the district has given them to work in collaborative teams. So they'll measure that learning loss from last spring, and then they'll continue with regular formative and summative assessments in order to measure students' progress as a result of instruction and intervention action. So they're going to intervene depending on what they get back from these formative assessments, both formal and informal, and intervene with groups of kids, even through Zoom meetings. All MCA teachers will utilize their subject area professional learning community to analyze assessment data and develop appropriate instruction and intervention actions. Now, on page 14 of the plan, you can see some of the actions we are taking to address pupil learning loss. These actions include musical instrument, camera, and art supplies purchases for our students to use at home so that they do not fall behind, but rather make gains in their learning. This is also important because our students love the arts. That's our focus at Marysville Charter Academy for the Arts. And being able to continue their progress in this area helps them stay connected to our school, and that's really important. And it's so much harder being virtual than if you're actually in the classroom, which should also improve our students' attendance. Now, the portion of the plan that addresses the mental health and well-being and school nutrition are basically the same as the district's plan. We feel these actions provide our students with the best possible education given the current situation. That's really all I have. This concludes our brief review of our plan. You can see everything on the tables there, what we're spending the money on, what our thinking is behind that. And I do also want to say that I want to thank the board for all the support over the years that you guys have given our school. We really do appreciate that. Are there any questions you might have?
This is Brandy Davis, and I just wondered about your enrollment. Has your enrollment decreased?
That is a good question. That's one thing I was really concerned about at the beginning of the year. But no, it has not. We have 377 students. We're typically between 360 and 400. And those years that we're up around 400, we're really pushing kids into these electives because that's where we have the trouble putting kids. We don't have quite enough electives. And this year we didn't try that so hard, knowing that we may go back to a blended format, knowing that we have to have smaller class size and keep the kids separated. But no, 377 is right up there with past years.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Any other comments or questions? Anyone? No, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
So is the motion to close the public hearing, Mr. Davis?
Yes. Motion to close, sorry.
Okay. Is there a second? Second by Mr. Fleury. Mr. Fleury, can you unmute your Chromebook? Looks like it's still muted. Jim?
Look for the little microphone there, Jimmy.
We can't hear you, Mr. Fleury. You'll need to unmute your Chromebook. Like did earlier. We'll do a roll call vote, and I can still see you fine, Jim, so when we get to you, if you want to raise your hand, we'll go that way. A roll call vote to close the public hearing. Mr. Davis? Mr. Allison.
Aye.
Mr. Fleury. Okay. Mr. Scott.
Yes.
Mr. Crawford.
Aye.
That's a yes. Motion carries 7 yes.
Thank you, Mr.
Malone. Thank you. Next, we have business services. Number one, 2019-20 unaudited actual financial report. Purpose of the agenda item is request the board review and approve the 2019-20 unaudited actual financial report. Mrs. Lofty?
Thank you, Board President Rasmussen, and good evening, board members. I have put together a presentation to present the unaudited actuals to you to go along with the nice, thick report that Fiscal Services has put together, the state report and the narrative. So Mr. Williams will be loading the presentation. There it is. Ready to advance, please. And I just put together the agenda so that I don't miss anything. I have a nice little thank you to our fiscal department. They worked all summer closing the books to get this particular report prepared. And it's been quite, there was quite a lot going on while that was happening. So extra appreciation to Jennifer, Amy, and others that might have worked on it. So thank you. And next slide, please. This is our standard LCAP budget cycle that you're probably familiar with at this point. You'll notice the goldenrod color circle that's kind of off to the side up there on the right. That's the unaudited actual. Because if you'll recall, in June, we adopted the budget for 2020-21, and those are the blue circles that indicate all of this year's mandatory reports. And then starting in January, we start looking at next year. So the numbers that we're discussing tonight are last year's actual numbers. Everything else we do is a budget and a projection. But when we close the books, we get actual. They'll remain the actual numbers for last year, unless when we have our external auditors review them, they find some material difference that we would have to adjust them. Other than that, these are our actual numbers for last year. Next slide, please. So we had major impact from COVID, of course. And so it's been a real roller coaster. Once it hit back in March, administration kind of went into immediately reducing, knowing that the economy was going to suffer drastically. We immediately reduced expenditures wherever possible. You know, everyone was on board with that and did a really good job. We quickly went into the distance learning mode. And when that occurred, there were some planned expenditures. Springtime is often a time when sites will expend a lot of their site discretionary money and different pots of money that they have, because that's just kind of part of the normal cycle. So we reduced or eliminated some of those planned expenditures as well. We did have new COVID-related expenditures, but overall it was a reduction. And so what you're going to see in these numbers is higher than average carryovers and a much higher ending fund balance than what we would normally have. Next slide, please.
So,
lots of numbers. Just to describe what you're seeing, descriptions of revenues and expenditures. This is all our general fund on the unrestricted side. And if you remember, the general fund has an unrestricted side where the majority of our expenditures occur and revenues received. And then the restricted side is particular pots of money, I like to call it, that have restricted use. This is the unrestricted side. the first column of numbers is what we estimated last year to end at, and you saw those numbers when we adopted this year's budget in June. And then the second column that I've highlighted is that is these actuals, is what actually occurred when we closed the books. The right-hand side of column is the variance, what that difference is. Because we're always looking at what did you last see, what is it now, and what's the difference. And there's some highlights of what some of the variances were. There was no difference in the revenues. Just obviously some salary and benefit savings. We had many fewer substitutes because March through June, of course, with the distance learning, we didn't have necessarily need for substitutes. I won't really go through all of these. I just wanted it to be transparent what they are. We can go ahead and move on. And then if anyone has any questions about it, I'm always glad to talk about the budget. So you can either ask at the end of the presentation or at another time. But we come down to ending balance. We estimated back in June that we would have about 31.4 million, and we ended with 41.9, so that big difference of 10.5 due to some of the impacts that I had discussed previously. Next slide, please. We'll be moving right to the restricted side. Much smaller budget. There was some differences in revenue, basically because some of our federal funds, we don't recognize the revenue until we spend it. So when we don't spend it by the end of the year, it's deferred into the next year, and so that's why there's some differences there. And so then just some of the differences in expenditures as well. Next slide, please. So this was the final revenues and expenditures combined, and you'll see that total revenues of $125 million, expenditures of $115, which increased our overall ending fund balance by $9.4 million, and the ending balance being $44 million. The road ahead is a bumpy one, and this solid ending fund balance is what's going to help us withstand cash deferrals and then any future revenue deficits that we experience because of the economy and so forth. So let's move to the next slide. So this is a description of the ending fund balances comparing the estimated actuals that we adopted in June with this year's budget, and then our actual closing numbers and what those differences are based on the components of ending fund balance. And just a reminder to when we see a good size ending fund balance, we start maybe thinking of uses for it. So there are a lot of assignments to these balances. And also to remember that our ending fund balance, our reserve, is one time in nature. Once it's spent, it's gone. And you can never use your ending fund balance for any expenses that are ongoing in nature. So I just wanted to make that statement so that we all remember that. Next slide, please, Brian. Thank you. So here's where we start looking at specifically what comprises our ending fund balance. See that a restricted balance there, and I've went ahead and highlighted what comprises that $5.2 million. And so we have lottery instructional materials is the $2.8 million, various other specific restricted balances that may only be used for that purpose. There's a negative amount because the CARES Act fund, the funds that we expended in 1920, we're not actually going to receive until this year. And this was a one-time only state-approved ability to close a resource with a negative balance. which, you know, the accountants are all, you know, having, you know, have to deal with that, but this is, in fact, the way that all the school districts are doing this particular piece of the restricted balance. So next slide, please. So this was this is a closer look at those actual expenditures using CARES Act funds in 1920 when everything, you know, became chaos and we did really some good distance learning and making everything work. So as you can see here, we spent the object codes are from the SAC, the state reports, and you may be somewhat familiar with those. 1, 2s, and 3s are salaries and benefits. 4s and 5s are materials and supplies and operating, other operating expenditures. 7,000s are where we, that's where we transferred funds to cover the cafeteria and their negative shortfall, which only occurred because of COVID, because they typically never have to have any additional funds. They are self-supporting, and they did a good job with that. And so that negative amount, again, all the school districts in the state, if they used any CARES Act funds, have this negative balance in that particular restricted resource. Next slide, please. So here's another big chunk of our general fund ending balance, and that's the other assignments. And so I've broken that out so that we can be transparent and see where all of that money is assigned to, target allocation. There's still the one-time facilities projects of $3.8 million, and we will be expending a chunk of that this year with our McKinney three-classroom expansion at McKinney Intermediate School. There's a different components of supplemental and concentration grant funds, and then not to pass over the site discretionary carryover, which was pretty substantial because, again, when that spring hit, everything kind of went in shutdown mode. It's like, you know, my goodness, we need to really save to protect our budget because we don't know what's coming with all of this. You'll see that we have assigned the special ed early intervention allocation for the Linda preschool classroom. That's also going to be expended, and we're in the works on that project as well. A very good project for our preschool kiddos. And then also that first COPS payment. You'll remember specifically, this is a little bit higher than the actual amount, but this is the amount that we transferred over from Fund 17, the Special Reserve Fund. So there's no money in Fund 17 any longer. And so I wanted to not lose sight of what we had there, and I placed it here with the, as the COPS payment. And it's a little bit more than the 2.8, but that's the exact amount that came over from Fund 17, just again to be very transparent. The unassigned, unappropriated number that isn't highlighted, you'll see, is the $21.4 million. It's right above that $44 million on the ending fund balance. And we're going to come to that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in a moment. Next slide, please. So this is what that 21-point-something unassigned is going to be very helpful to us to get through this year, because you'll remember this slide. It was either the enacted, it was probably the enacted budget update that I presented in August where I shared this slide, and there was that little picture of Elvis, cash is king, because we have to have cash to operate our district. And so these deferrals, this is the billions of dollars of deferrals, and what it amounts to for Maryfield Joint Unified is that first amount up there, the $26.4 million in this school year that we won't get until next year. So that $21 million of unassigned fund balance is going to help us weather this and get through it without having to borrow cash. And we're very fortunate. You know, I have to thank the board for all of, over the years, your prudent expenditures and monitoring of the budget has put us in this position to be able to weather this at this point. We don't know what next year will look like, but I'll remind us that school budgets can only do as well as the state budget because we're based on a percentage of the state budget. So if the state budget, you know, continues, you know, depending on what that recovery looks like, school budgets will follow that. It's a little bit inaccurate this year that we didn't decline necessarily because they instead chose to fund us but then defer actually paying us. So that's what's happening with that. And then we still have COVID-19 expenses that were kind of are evolving as well. You know, we've got, you know, a lot of different expenditures that due to COVID that are that we're realizing. And then also, you know, remember the discussions before the pandemic. Our budget had a bit of a structural deficit, meaning that we were spending every year more in expenditures than we were getting in. So it was eating into the fund balance, and that over time isn't sustainable. So that's still there. It's just that you can't see it right now because of all of these different anomalies that are occurring. And then, you know, everybody's favorite, the COPS payment beginning in 2023 that'll last for 30 years, and that's $2.8 million a year. So next slide, please. And this is just other funds of the district. We do have, you know, we have our NCAA account, we have a child development fund, our cafeteria fund, deferred maintenance, and so on. All of these funds have positive ending fund balances. You'll notice that Fund 21, the building fund, is going to go from $12.5 million to $500,000. We may not get all the way there this year, but by the end of the project, expansion project at Arboga, it will be, you know, depleted because that's what we're funding that particular project with, is those bond funds that are in there. And we can only use these funds and these, the money in these funds for the purposes of the fund. You know, that's the legal requirement, just so that everybody's aware. And then next slide. So we're all the way here now to our next steps. And I, because of our ending fund balance being where it is right now, we had previously talked about the need to have our budget reduction process in place. And I think that we can postpone it right now at this time. I don't know once January and next year's budget proposal is presented that we can maintain postponing that. But right now, I think we can and concentrate on other things that there's so much going on. And we would just request that you approve these unaudited actuals. And then our next report will be in December when we'll look at this year's budget and how it's changed from budget adoption to the October 31st picture that we take. And that's my presentation. If you have any questions, I think that's the last slide that asks for questions.
Very nice report. This is Randy Davis. And I just wondered with what we know right now, do we think we are going to have to implement a downsizing in 2021?
That's a great question. And I think that we'll, you know, it's just depends on how the economy recovers and I think that we'll have reductions, but to what extent, I don't think anybody can really project right now. So I think we're poised and ready to do whatever we need to do. But I think until we see what the governor's budget proposal is in January, unless we hear something else definitive, it seems to me that everything is really concentrating on that November election. And it doesn't seem that they wanted, you know, at one point we thought they might do a revised state budget this year, but then that kind of went away, I feel, because of the concentration on the election. And so I think once we have that November election, then everything will start concentrating more on current year, the economy, and what next year is going to look like. So
that's it. Thank you very much.
I wish I knew more.
Any other comments, questions? I'd just like to say thank you. It's a lot of things for putting that together for us. You did an excellent job. If there's no other comments or questions, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the unaudited actual financial report.
Motion to approve by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second. Jim Flurry.
Mr. Flurry. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Flurry.
Yes.
Trustee Scott. Trustee Scott.
That's a yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Item number 2, Resolution 2020-21/08, adoption of the 2021 GAN limit and the 1921 recalculation. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve a resolution adopting the district's 2021 and 1920 recalculated GAN limit. Mrs. Laughlin?
This is a standard resolution that you approve every year. It's based on the intent to constrain the growth in state and local government spending by linking it to year-to-year changes in expenditures to changes in inflation. It's a state calculation. We use that calculator, and it's pretty standard.
Do we have any questions or comments from board members?
Now, we'll
entertain a motion.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve by Mr. Flurry. Is there a second?
Susan Scott. I'll
second by Randy.
Second by Ms. Scott. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Flurry.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crawford.
Aye.
Trustee Rasmussen. Yes. Mr. Boone, I want to go back just to clarify. You didn't say yes. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Motion carries, 7 yes. Business services number 3, agreement with ISM Advisors, a division of Urban Futures Incorporated for financial advisory services. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the agreement with ISM Advisors, a division of Urban Futures Incorporated, to provide financial advisory services as needed per the terms of the agreement. Mrs. Lofty?
Yes, as previously approved, the request for proposals was put out, and we had 6 responses. We followed all the compliance for choosing the firm that best meets the needs of Marysville Joint Unified School District, and that's ISM Advisors. We have Greg ISM here this evening to give you a presentation on ISM Advisors and what that's going to mean to MJUSD. Greg?
All right. Well, I'm Greg Isom with ISM Advisors. I'm very excited to be presenting to Marysville tonight. If you have the presentation or if it could be brought up, I'll just go briefly over this because I know it's been a long meeting for you guys. If you go to page one of the presentation, this just kind of gives you an idea of who we are. Okay, so we're financial advisors that work with school districts that assist them with debt, whether it's bonds, COPs, leases, anything of that nature. Okay. So if you just look to the next page, it'll just give you an idea of some of the regional experience that we have. So if you see, you know, Biggs, Chico, Colfax, Durham, Gridley, we probably work with about 90% of all the school districts in Northern California. When I say Northern California, I'm saying anything kind of north of Sacramento, all the way up to, you know, Shasta County, Tehama County, Butte, Placer. So this just gives you an idea of some of the guys that we work with. On page two, I believe, you know, this was of importance to your administration team on how often or how, you know, successful are you in working with school districts. And here is a comparison chart that we showed during our interview to the district showing how we rank compared to some of our neighboring our competitors in the industry. And so the reason why this is important, that it shows that we're number one, is that we have the most experience working with any K-12 school district in the state of California. We work with, you know, roughly 40% of all the school district bond sales in the state. And this is a benefit to Marysville in that, you know, we have our finger on the pulse when it comes to, you know, interest rates, ideas, more so than anyone else, because we are literally in the marketplace, you know, every week, if not multiple times a week. If you go to the next page, this one, I think, you know, it was potentially beneficial for the district in the future, but when it comes to, you know, working with school district bond measures and the successes that we have with them, you can see that this is truly our specialty. You know, if you said, you know, Greg, are you really good at developer fees? I'd say, no, hire someone else, you know, but if it's, when it comes to debt, when it comes to bonds, this is what we do. You know, and so what one, I don't have the actual number there on the page, but when it shows 73 of our success, or of our bonds were successful, that was at a total of 75. So we have the highest track record, and we work with the most throughout the state of California. On page four of this brief presentation, this is our staff. And so what makes our team truly unique is that we don't really have any junior analysts on our team. All of our people have been working with school districts, you know, for almost 10-plus years, all of them. And so if there's ever a time to where I couldn't make a meeting, you know, there's already three people that are involved in every single aspect of this financing. Your Penny has personally worked with a few of these people. And so there's always three to four people who ensure that, you know, no one drops the ball at any given point. If you go to the next page, this is one of the more exciting ones, has to do with the potential refinancing of some of the district's outstanding COPs. Now, similar to a home mortgage, when a school district has debt, you guys have the ability to refinance bonds like you have done in the past, but in this case, we're talking about refinancing COPs, you know, or in essence, loans that the district has taken out. So you'll do that. I'm sorry? Okay, I'll just keep going. So in 2012, the district took out a COP, which in essence is a certificate of participation, a loan. And right now, or actually it's the savings are probably a little bit better than when I put this presentation together. We're talking about savings of over $11 million. Okay. And so how does this look in comparison of when you sold old debt compared to where you are right now? If you turn to page six, this is the interest rate environment page, which shows, you flip to page six, please. Perfect. And so that shows where the average rates are for debt. And you can see at the very bottom, which is, you know, not even intentionally there, but you can see the current rate, which is 2.09. So we are currently in the lowest historical interest rate environment in the history of bonds and COPs. Okay. Wow. So for any district that wanted to sell bonds, what an incredible time to save taxpayers' money. For districts who are looking to refinance debt, whether it's bonds or COPs, what an opportunity, you know, for districts right now. So if you turn to page seven, this shows you what the savings could look like, okay? And so on pages 7 and 8, you don't need to flip to 8 yet, but we've given a couple of different scenarios for the district to choose from. And so while the decision hasn't been made yet, these are some options that are floating around where you can take all the savings, or you can see in 2023 all the way to 2042, and they're kind of proportional savings, or we call them level savings. And you're saving over $500,000 a year, you know, for almost the next 20 years, and that gets you to $11 million. Conversely, on the page 8, some districts say, you know, I want to save as much money as possible. So one option for the district to do is you can shave off a couple of years where you take the savings on the back end, and that takes the savings to $15 million. Another option that's not on here for discussing this, you know, with Penny is, well, maybe do you want to take some upfront savings? You know, while the savings may not be $15 or $11 million, but maybe the savings are going to be $8 million and you can get it in the first, you know, 2 to 3 years, all those savings, okay? So we are working with your administrative team to figure out what is the best solution for Marysville Unified School District and what's going to help you guys get the biggest bang for your buck. And that is my short presentation. Penny said to keep it short, and I try to follow directions the best that I can.
Thank you, Greg.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have any questions from board members?
Hi, this is Jeff. Hey, it talks about the fee for selling bonds. What's the fee for COPS when you're doing the COPS and not the bonds? Are those the same thing? Are you calling them the same thing?
You know, great question. So our fee is the same for bonds and for COPs.
Okay, so when you sell the COPs, it's $60,000 for each COP.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yes. Great question.
I see that if I may, that Mr. Isom's firm, Isom Advisors, they don't charge an annual financial advisor fee. They basically make their fees with the bond issues and so forth. So, or any other financing that we would do. And if there's none done in a year, we're not paying them $15,000.
Correct.
That's also an attraction. So.
Any other comments or questions? I'd like to thank Mr. Isom for your presentation.
Thank you.
We'll entertain a motion.
Motion approved.
Motion approved by Mr. Crawford. Is there a second?
Second, Fleury.
Mr. Fleury. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Boone.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Trustee Crowder.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carried, 7 yes. Thank you, Ms. Rasmussen.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Next, we have business services. Number 4, authorization to proceed with pre-construction and lease-back services with core construction for the Amoga Elementary School expansion conversion to TK8. Purpose of the agenda item is to request the board approve the authorization to proceed with pre-construction and lease-back services with core construction for the Amoga Elementary School expansion conversion to TK8 school project in the amount of $18,000. Do we have Ms. Rossing or who we have there?
Yes, that would be me. And basically this last board meeting, the board approved the selection of core construction. And this authorization is proceeding with the pre-construction services. I explained that our lease-to-lease-back documents were set up as a total package, but we really wanted to break out the pre-construction so that they could provide us with a full schedule of values and so forth to get that best guaranteed maximum price contract that we could. And Mr. Barnett, did you have anything you wanted to add? Oh, you're muted.
Sorry. No, that pretty much covers it. Like Ms. Fossen is saying, it continues, kind of gets us going on the right track to move things forward. And as of today, we're about 50% complete on design since the last board meeting. So things are moving along rather nicely as well.
Thank you, Mr. Barnett.
So if I may ask a question, this Randy gave us, that $18,000 is a part of what we approved already. It's not an additional charge.
Correct. That is correct.
So, Ms. Lawson, did you mean to go over the email that you sent out today? Maybe there were some board members that didn't receive that email. Just kind of describing or explaining that?
Yes. The way our lease-back contract was structured, it was to take the entire contract at once. And we wanted to break out the pre-construction services. It's all part of the total amount for core construction, but the contract wasn't structured in that manner. So the last time that when we did the selection of core, we were working on breaking out the pre-construction piece because we want them to do that because when we get the final contract, we want to include the information they're determining through the pre-construction services. That schedule of values will be like what stove we have in the kitchen and so forth. I'm probably not describing that real well, but it's going to be that schedule of everything that's going to be part that's going to comprise the whole project. And it's just the way that the lease-back document contract was structured. In the future, we would have it structured more how we like to, the timing and method that we like to use. So we kind of had to break that apart and do it in this manner to get the best final contract.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Travis, one quick question for you. Sign off is Frank Crawford. I think I asked this last meeting. Has core construction have a starting date now? Construction starting date or?
We're still tracking on the original starting date. So right now, as Ms. Lawson stated, that they are gathering the schedule of values. So what that means is that they're going through contacting all subcontractors. They're starting to develop an in-depth accurate schedule. So we should have that, I think they said, towards the end of October. So then we'll have an actual date. So right now, come October, kind of the end of October, we're going to have accurate. I'd hate to throw out any dates right now because we're waiting on all those subcontractors to get back to us with their actuals.
I respect that. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Penny, this is Jeff. Hey, was there a contingency on that? I don't remember.
I don't believe there is, Jeff. I don't recall seeing one. That guaranteed maximum price is it.
It is what it is. Okay, no contingency if there's any unforeseeable circumstances.
I think what happened is we worked through that as things unfold. We'll have that schedule of values, and then if something comes up, we can, they'll be very closely monitoring the budget throughout, and that's one of the reasons we chose CORE, because they have that good ability to do that, and then any adjustments would be made so that we maintain that guaranteed maximum price.
Absolutely. So in the event that there was any unforeseen, there would have to be a legitimate unforeseen. So at this point, when they say guaranteed price, when they give us their proposal, that's what it is. If something changes along the lines in the project where we want to add to the scope, that obviously would add to the overall price. But, you know, getting them on board like we are right now, we don't foresee any unexpected changes. That's what the best part about this value engineering is, that they're involved right now. So it really limits the change orders you'll see, if any, at this point. So we shouldn't see any additional costs unless it was something that was brought on that was way out of the realm of expenses.
Yeah, I understand that. That just all the lease-leasebacks we did in the past, it seemed like there was a small contingency fee, like 5-7%. And generally, the district got all that money back or never paid it out. But I was just curious because I don't recall ever seeing a lease-leaseback without a contingency. But thank you.
Okay. It could be that when we bring that final lease-leaseback contract with all the value engineered schedule of value, that there is one. I can't say for sure that there's not. So yes, it is possible, especially if you have a recollection that there has been in the past.
Yeah, so as far as contingencies go, it's usually built into the overall maximum price that we want to put into the project. That will be included in that schedule of value, so you'll see it probably put in there, and usually it's anywhere from 5 to 10% of the project cost for unforeseen. That will give us our, kind of like you said, that cushioning if there is any unforeseen that come up. So, yeah, that typically is built into the overall maximum price. And like you said, if they don't use it in the contingency, then it goes back into the project or back into the budget.
So, Travis or Penny, could you explain a little bit more what the schedule of value, what is that?
Can we go ahead, Penny?
Yeah.
All right. So, a schedule of values is, so we take the overall project price, right, and they go down and it gives me the idea of what a plumber is going to cost, what the groundwork, the electrical, it goes through each trade, carpentry, the buildings, HVAC. So it's literally a grocery, we'll just say a grocery list of what everything's going to cost down to the shade structures, the playground, roofing. I mean, it gives you every single breakdown of every single thing in that project. That way we can track it through expenditure. So when we get into it, that's how we go through and we'll bring forth the board when we say the guaranteed maximum price, the final price of the project. You guys will see in front of you a schedule of value. So it's basically like the grocery list. You'll see every one of those skilled trades and what we're paying and what it came out to be. So let's just say in the instance we realize that the project goes over $400,000 or $500,000, we actually look at that list and we can start looking at, you know, are we getting the best price on these things or do we need to remove it out of the scope, right, to fit the budget. So that's why it's really important right now that Core Construction, working with TBK Architects, are going through each one of these schedule of values to get us the best pricing we can. And we as a district get to look at that schedule of values and understand where our money is going.
And that's why we're splitting it up like we are, so that we can have all of that incorporated into the final lease-leaseback contract. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, so, Penny, when we have a guaranteed maximum price, it is what it is. If something unforeseen comes up, there's not going to be a contingency fee that can come back on the district.
Well, I would hesitate to say that if there's something unforeseen, because we don't know what that might be.
Okay, so we're not going to put a cap on the contingency fee?
Well, there will be an amount.
Like a 5%, 7%, whatever, a cap on it of some percentage would be a cap.
Right. So what we'll probably end up doing is we'll go to the architects when they're doing the value engineering and we start looking at the schedule of values come in at, and then we'll probably add in at that point because they're now doing their civil geotechnical surveys, things like that. So as we get that schedule of values, they'll give the recommendation of what that cap will be, whether it's 5% or 10%. Usually in new construction type things, we're seeing 5%, but a lot of people are going out and bluffing them to 10%. But being that we're going through with this value engineering and we're getting the schedule of values, it'll give us more of an accurate cap. But that will also be included when we bring it next to the board for you guys to go through and see exactly where that's at. But once we set the contingency and the board approves that contingency, we don't go above that.
Thank you, Travis.
Absolutely.
Okay, any other comments or questions? Not, we'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve, Fleury.
Motion to approve of Mr. Fleury. Is there a second?
Second by Randy Davis.
Second by Mr. Davis. Roll call vote. Trustee Davis?
Yes.
Trustee Boone?
Yes.
Trustee Allison?
Aye.
Trustee Fleury?
Yes.
Trustee Scott?
Yes.
Trustee Crowder?
Aye.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, 7 yes. Thank you very much, Danny and Travis. Number 5. A letter of agreement and addendum with the site Lago for development of a facility solution and facilities improvement, energy conservation, energy generation, and or energy management services. The purpose of the agenda item is to request the board to approve the letter of agreement and addendum with site Lago. For development of facility solution for facilities improvement, energy conservation, energy generation, and or energy management services per the agreement in the amount not to exceed $59,500. Ms. Lansing?
Yes, we have Representative Jennifer Butler from SiteLogic here to do a presentation, and this basically will be them preparing a plan to bring the school district up to par with energy efficiency, basically. They'll be, and she'll go through what it entails. So I'll turn it over to Jennifer and let her give you the presentation.
Thank you, Penny.
Thank you.
Brian, if you want to go ahead, please, and start the presentation. Just to the second page is fine. So good evening, Marysville Board of Trustees. As Penny said, my name is Jennifer Butler, and I'm a Facility Solutions Specialist with SiteLogic. I'm going into my 12th year at the company. My sole focus is K-12. I'm particularly passionate about my role because of my own experience as a parent in public education. I know firsthand that our school facilities often fall short of the state recommended 21st century learning environment. And I know, too, that often there is way more to be done than there is money for. So finding ways to leverage money that you're already paying to PG&E to fund modernization projects and reduce overall operating expenses, a passion and my motivation. So just quickly, thank you for considering the letter of agreement, which is the investigative beginning engineering portion of an energy services agreement. The document that you have before you tonight will authorize us to conduct a physical audit and to collect the data necessary to analyze the potential for energy generation and energy saving measurements. For this phase, we'll be looking at the district's HVAC, lighting, controls, and solar power generation potential. And the result of this study will be a recommendation for a design-build bundled project, which will have sustainable energy strategies that will allow the district to basically address critical failures and overdue deferred maintenance projects with no out-of-pocket expenses. So that's that. So if you could advance, please, Brian. I do have an agenda for tonight, and there is a Q&A portion at the end, but if you would like to ask any questions during the presentation, please feel free. Next slide. I'm going to give you a lot of information tonight, but I really want you to focus on four key takeaways, and that this is an energy savings project that asks for no new money. It means that the savings from your energy projects, that you'll reduce your operating costs, you enhance your reliability of operations, and it's at no risk, meaning that both the savings on energy, or the production of energy, and the cash savings are guaranteed by us. And I'll give you a clear demonstration of what that means. Go ahead and advance. Before I begin reviewing these challenges, I want to give you a brief background on how I've come before you tonight. I've worked on a similar successful energy services project with Penny at another district, and so she fully understands how a bundled energy project works. Additionally, I started working with Travis in 2019, yes, to identify those areas of the greatest concern to the district, like the failing chiller plant at Lindquist or Power Hills at Foothills. But what we found is that even from a 30,000-foot view, we know that the challenges I'm going to show you next are district-wide. So go ahead with the next slide. So we know that you have HVAC challenges. I don't know, Brian, if you could enlarge that picture to the right just for a quick second. But we know that the majority of the district, the equipment is well past the useful life. There are very expensive maintenance and repair costs. There is a slew of hot and cold, which are employee and student comfort. And there's just not enough staff to address the constant failures of comfort calls. Again, we have the critical failure at Lindhurst Central Plant, which I'd say that would be a high priority item. And because there has been a huge variety of different manufacturers and engineering in the past, there is a big inability to air balance your HVAC systems by building by campus. Also, there's no district-wide consistency, meaning that there's a hodgepodge of a different types of equipment and systems throughout the district. And that's inefficient and costly, especially since it requires quite the staff to be able to address so many different types of systems. And then as you are very familiar with under today's circumstances, there's the issue of poor air quality. So we have obviously COVID, but we have a very ambitious fire season already started. So it's going to be more and more important that we address air quality throughout the district. So I'm going too fast, but I know it's late in the evening, so I'm trying to go fairly quickly. But just let me know if I'm going too quickly. So next slide, please. Controls. I have very antiquated system software. So it doesn't have the ability to perform a lot of the user functions, which results in incorrect equipment scheduling. And what I mean by that is an efficient system allows you to schedule for occupancy and non-occupancy. And district-wide, you don't have those capabilities. And you're also unable to connect remotely, which means that you have to dispatch someone to go on-site and address a situation that might otherwise be able to be done via a laptop or even a phone. But more importantly, we have a lot of non-compliant California Title 24 operations. These systems are very inefficient, big energy waste, again, no district-wide consistency, which leads to a lot of increased operational costs. Next slide. I'm going to just skip past this. You know that you have pathogen mitigation issues. We are going to just include that as part of our solution, so we don't even have to think about this right now. We have some solutions that we'll include. So go ahead to number 9, please. It's like a Beatles song, number 9. Brian.
Next slide.
Next slide, please.
We're having a little difficulty here. Can you hear us okay?
We can hear you.
Okay, hang on. Zoom is opening.
I have Frank's iPad.
Just got to get back in so we can share the same.
Well, I can guarantee that if I was in person, this would be happening too. It's just my luck. You would think I wouldn't sweat about it anymore, but I always do.
You're doing great.
Oh, thank you.
I'm in a meeting. I don't know if all that's possible, but I'm in a meeting. Oh, Mr. Williams got booted out of our meeting.
That's ironic. Well, we'll give him a minute to get back in. Well, maybe while we're waiting for Brian to jump in, I'll go back to the idea of long-term pathogen mitigation. There is a very low-cost solution for long-term pathogen mitigation. It's a small ionization unit that sits inside of the HVAC unit. It has a 20-foot span with no maintenance, and it is third-party verified to kill 98% of coronavirus specifically. So we plan to include that as part of our solution. We do a lot of pathogen mitigation with other districts. And so we call that our engineered infection protection program. Sounds very fancy.
This is Randy Davis, and the question I have for is the bang for the buck. What in all of your experience has been your the investment and the return on the investment?
On an energy services job? Or
yes.
On pathogens?
No. It's cost benefit.
The best cost benefit that I believe in and will only do is the one in which the district is producing enough of their own energy and saving enough of their energy to mitigate what they're currently spending with their utility company. So that the district, even if they were to borrow to do the job, has more money in savings than they do in return. So in that way, you're guaranteed over 100% return on investment every time. And I do have a slide that'll go a little bit more into that. But that really is the only business that I do. It has to be either budget neutral or pay for itself.
Thank you very much.
And also to add on top of that, Ms. Lossing and I, we've done an extensive searches on different companies and what they're offering. And what SiteLogic offers is very unique. And part of the things that kind of brought them to the top, because we've looked at different energy companies here and there, what really sets them apart is the fact that they're not proprietary, right? Because a lot of the stuff we have, you heard us talk in one of our slides about how we have this hodgepodge and mixed match of control systems, HVAC units, thermostats, things like that. But a lot of the times the district says don't have a contract with a lot of these companies are proprietary, which means that our business guys are locked in with them and they end up being a lot more expensive than others. So as we kind of went here to look for energy services on what to provide for the district, we've really uncovered that there was a lot of wasted utility costs. And obviously without a bond being passed and kind of the financial restraints we've come across, this seemed like a very viable solution. Upgrade our facilities and bring new infrastructure that otherwise we'd utility companies. So it still goes through in the presentation when Brian can get it up and going. You'll kind of see why we're putting this forward to really investigate and dig deeper into what we can, what SiteLogic can provide.
Yeah, well said. Yes. Certainly being manufacturer agnostic is a very big benefit. So let's go to 9, please, Brian. So some of your lighting challenges, end-of-life fixtures and ballast, poor light levels, as you can see here, the before and after example, a high maintenance demand, energy inefficient, cost inefficient. You have a lot of campus safety issues, and again, no district-wide consistency. So you don't have equalization across the district. So number 10, please. Also shade, as you all know, it's heating up, and there is no natural shade for outdoor eating, classrooms, or play yards. I can't remember the study that I had done or that I had looked at. It was a student survey that Marysville had done some time back where one of the things that the students said was that they had nowhere to eat outside that wasn't roiling hot. Looking at providing some shade structures through our solar arrays. So number 11, please. So this is a little bit about what Travis was just speaking to. As you know, your utility cost escalation is between 6 and 12% per year. So last year, when we did our first round of analyzing your current utility spend, it was at $1.7 million. I spoke with Jennifer and Penny, and it's actually more than that now. So the district, as you can see in the bottom right-hand side, is at almost $8 per square foot. Really, where we want to see the district performing is at $1.5 per square foot. So that's why you're up in that red, edging towards that red. So there's a lot of serious energy reduction that can take place. And additionally, there currently isn't any existing energy management or verification tool. So the district is spending without really any eye on it. And so we'll remedy that as well with our energy management program. So number 12 is, so those were some examples of your current challenges. I don't want to bring you down. But again, they are district wide. So our solution to that, as I just spoke to one of the trustees, is to leverage energy savings. And so how do we come across the solution is that we realize that simply doing a project one at a time through the standard RFP process was an expensive and stagnant process. So we've tried to reimagine the procurement process and create a kind of more dynamic change to an outdated way of doing business. Instead, we wanted to bundle as many facets of needs into a single project and use those energy savings to pay for it versus doing multiple smaller projects being paid for out of a vulnerable general fund. And because we do it this way, we're able to expand the scope of the project and address as much of the district's physical and functional needs as possible. This kind of also reminds me that the way we do business is highly competitive because we uniquely perform the majority of the work in-house, which eliminates what we call layers of margin stacking, which is what happens when the work is subbed out to multiple contractors. Sometimes we're able to save up to 40% on these projects because we bundle them together and do them in-house. So that's a great advantage. So why don't we go ahead to slide, the next slide, please. So what is an energy services agreement? It's a performance-based contract with which the service provider, which would be us, we agree to help you identify your financing, develop and deploy energy efficiency renewable energy projects for clients, which would be you, without any upfront capital expenditures. So what you do is you agree to pay for your project through your energy savings. And these are the, this is going to be less than what you currently write a check for to PG&E. That's really important to understand. So number 14. So how it works is on the left, you see how you're currently spending money, you're currently spending on energy and operations and maintenance budget. When you bundle the energy services together, you have reduced energy, which is the blue in the middle column. You have a debt service if you go out for a tax exempt municipal lease or a COP. The cost to do the project to the company like ourselves, and the remaining is the cash flow. And that's what's happening during the project. And then after the project is you have your new and reduced energy use and operations budget, and the rest is all cash flow savings. And as ISIM just mentioned, with the rates being historically low, the savings are just unseen before. The opportunity for savings are just incredible. So does everybody understand that? Can I advance to the next?
Yes.
Okay, because I would say that more than half of our K-12 clients have no capital funding to implement energy conservation or generation or modernization or even infrastructure improvements. So we've really become experts at obtaining, you know, alternate funding for K-12 clients, whether you fund it through incentives, bonds, stimulus funding, or low-interest financing. And we have worked with ISIM advisors successfully on many projects with several different districts. So go ahead and advance. So, Brian, are you able to increase this just a little bit? So we can just zoom in a bit. And go down the bottom left-hand corner first. Thank you. So currently, based on our preliminary analysis of your energy, the district is able to do a project value of $26 million with a return of investment of 102%. That's if you did a 20-year tax-exempt municipal lease at 3%. We saw that today's rates are actually lower, and we use the assumption that the utility is going to escalate 4% a year, which is considerably lower than it already does. So given that, information in this cash flow analysis and with the guarantee that comes from my company for your cash savings in the first year, if you go ahead now to move up, you can see in the annual finance payment, that would be your debt services, which is the second column in pink. And then your operations and maintenance and solar costs are there in pink. Your direct savings that you would no longer be paying PG&E would be $1.4 million. A very, very conservative estimate of savings on maintenance and otherwise other things would be $130,000. So your first year guaranteed is a saving of $1.5 million to the district, which is very good. So that's a production guarantee, meaning that we will offset your existing energy costs. The cash guarantee means that the district is guaranteed to keep that cash in the general fund and eliminate all risks for the district. And so a final cash flow analysis will be presented to your financial advisor and your assistant superintendent, Penny, for review, and to your legal for their thorough vetting, and then brought back to the board for understanding and approval after we've identified which projects are going to be able to get us these type of results. So you can see after 25 years, which is, if we were to do solar, less than the life expectancy of the solar array, would be a cash flow positive savings to the district of $26 million, which is a lot. So any questions on that?
One question I have is, does this include any shade structures with solar collectors on them?
Yes. Yes, it does. And after we get the letter of agreement signed and approved by the board, we'll basically mobilize a big group of people, lighting engineers, solar engineers, mechanical engineers, and all these engineers are going to bombard Travis and start doing all types of auditing and analytics to determine what projects are going to be the best return on investment. And those will be brought to the board either through a board workshop or review or back to a board meeting.
Thank you.
I have a quick question. When you're doing your evaluation, we have a number of schools that quite often have their power turned off by PG&E. In this evaluation, are you going to be able to give us some options for schools to set up alternative power for schools when we don't have power?
Yes. We actually are looking a little bit already. Forgive me. I love this kind of stuff. So there's a AB 841 is before Governor Newsom right now. That's a program that is going to give some funding to schools to do some upgrades. And we have actually looked at some pretty creative ways to use that fund to pay for some solutions for the PSPS events. So I'm hoping that we'll be able to address some of those that are more susceptible to that event.
Yeah. Hi, this is Jeff Boom. I got a couple of questions for you. First of all, go back to your filters, your pathogen filters. What kind of testing have they gone through? Are those FDA approved, or how do you come up with the numbers of the amount of pathogens that it reduces?
Yeah, that's a great question. And actually, it's not a filter. is what we call a zapper. And so what we found is with the filters, there are a lot of recommendations to use a MERV 13 filter. And the MERV 13 filter, why it's a quick remedy, it only addresses particles versus pathogens. So the ionization unit actually reduces that, the pathogen. It basically rearranges this structure so that it's no longer a pathogen. The ionization unit has gone through several very world-renowned labs for third-party authorization and is currently being used in the White House, Air Force One, hospitals, and is reimbursable through the CARES Act, which is a great thing. So it's had a lot of vetting. We're actually going to be offering the district 100 free units as part of a case study. We're hoping to, once we have a normal school year, see if it has any reduction in absenteeism.
So I'm sorry, I'm breaking up a little bit, so I can't hear you that well. So who's done the testing on these ionization filters or whatever they're called?
So several independent labs have done them. And I'm just, let me just pull up. I don't remember the name of the labs very well. There's only so much information my poor little brain can hold. I just want to see if I can find the name of that lab. Oh, boy.
This hasn't been approved by the United States government for these amount of pathogens that it's supposed to reduce.
I don't know that they would approve that. Because it is an actual unit, I don't know what approval process would be in. Certainly,
okay, the testing, they're not involved in any of the testing so far.
That is correct.
Because you're talking about coronavirus pathogens, those types of things, which is very crucial to getting our kids back to school safe. So, you know, that's a big statement to make. And
yeah,
I would like to see the documentation to back it up.
Yeah,
but,
we have.
Go ahead. And then, do you guys get paid an annual fee on this for the life of the project, or how does that work?
Nope. We get paid for the project. And like you were talking with Core Construction, we have a guaranteed maximum price. One of our differentials is we don't believe in the change order game. We do recommend that you hold some owner contingencies in case you, the district, would like to make changes, but we get a guaranteed maximum price. That's why we do the preliminary engineering.
Okay, and then what is the expected life of your solar panels that you use?
The solar panels that we use are currently seeing a lifespan average, which is very good and very distinctive, of 30 years.
30 years, and what's the drop-off after 30 years?
The drop-off is after every year, and that is factored into our engineering. But after 30 years, we're not seeing more than a 7 to 8% drop-off.
Yeah, that's pretty darn good.
Yeah, we really
we
actually use a Canadian product usually, which is a much higher quality product than we're seeing out of, for example, China.
And does each panel have its own converter?
It really
depends. Or are you depending? Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it just depends on what type of system we decide to go on or to go in for that particular space and demand. And we'll have all that for you very well organized and easy read for how many inverters go. And we also include in our energy management component, our operations and maintenance component. They include the price for converter failure so that there's no surprise to the district at a later date.
Okay, and then one final question. We've kind of went through this before where we had centralized thermostats that were controlled from a centralized point, and the different sites didn't take very kindly to that. It wasn't very well received. How does that work? Are sites able to use a thermostat the way they want, or is it only, you know, all controlled from one central location?
We can actually set it up to be any way that the district would like. We can do wide for schedules, meaning we know this is spring break, we know this is Christmas break, and so forth. And then we can drill down and have very individual rooms temperature sets. For example, we actually have a hot person and a cold person, so you can go very detailed. And then those teachers and or staff, they have an override capacity. We found that if we set it for those people that are hot and those people that are cold, kind of playing into this natural body temperature differential, and then give them override capability, that primarily, I would say, over 90% of the staff is satisfied with the temperature setting.
All right, and I'd like to interject as well to help answer that question, Mr. Allen. Also, when this first rolled out, when we changed thermostats throughout the district, the communication piece was absolutely missing. So a lot of these sites arrived at school unaware that the thermostats had been changed along with any type of energy management program. So to the district surprise, teachers came back, staff, you know, our staff came back, and, you know, their thermostats were locked, and we had a lot of unhappy campers. And that's part of what SiteLogic, from my research, and Jennifer, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it's really about the communication and rolling it out and making a successful energy management program through educating staff and then really, really driving the message home. So they kind of feel like they're in control to a certain extent, but they also know what they're getting into.
Travis, I agree with you on that. And then the final question I have is, if we enter into agreement and, you know, no matter what the price is it funded by savings each year?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we have to come up with a loan, bond, or general fund money to pay the upfront costs?
So typically, unless you have a bond, the district will get either a COP, which was what Greg Eisen was speaking of, with a low interest rate, or a tax-exempt municipal lease. Typically, that payment, that debt service, combined with your cost to operate the system, should always be less than what you're currently paying, so that you're seeing savings from year one, what you're currently paying to PG&E.
Right, and is there, you talk about a guarantee, is there a guarantee that it will always be less?
We will guarantee your production and your savings, and we will, I mean, I guess we can't say that in 20 years there's a new utility company who is doing, you know, declining utility rates. Certainly in the life of California, we haven't seen that, but we've seen a lot of stuff that we've never seen before. But it's very unlikely that you would not be seeing savings year after year.
You wouldn't see any what? I'm sorry.
It's very unlikely that you would not be seeing savings year after year.
Thank you.
It's 33 years, and we have not seen the situation yet.
And could I clarify real quickly, too? You said that there's not an ongoing cost for the company, but we do have the energy management, that third pink column there, where we do pay you for energy management and maintenance of the system, but that's how you guarantee we get the savings, because if you see an anomaly where they'll dial in and they will continually monitor, and if they see where we're using more energy than we should be, they'll fix it, correct?
Correct. Thank you, Penny. That's a really important piece. I'd have to say that probably well over half of the districts that I've gone to work with that have existing solar have an issue with their solar system that they have never even identified, even some that where it is not working and they don't know it. So that is an important component of our guaranteeing it, is that we're maintaining it and monitoring it.
And is the cost of cleaning these solar systems scheduled into that?
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The one question I have, Mrs. Brandy Davis, is that this $59,500, is that an annual charge?
No, that is a one-time cost that is rolled into the project should you move forward. The only time that that would be charged is if we were to present the district with a viable cost-saving solution and you decided not to move forward. But if that were the event, the engineering that we're doing for that cost remains the property of the district.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Jennifer also mentioned that one of their, the standard part of the process is to have a board workshop once they complete the study. To kind of go over everything that's involved at all the different sites. Am I not correct?
Yes, and that's a very important component just so everyone understands and so that everyone agrees what our priorities should be when we approach the project. So we may give you one or two opportunities to, decide if you would rather have lighting here versus controls there. So we'll let the board have, as stakeholders, as much involvement as possible.
Right. And the biggest thing is from a facility standpoint is we've shared with Jennifer some of the high priority projects that are outstanding right now. As you stated, the Lyndhurst High School Central Plant.
Yeah.
We have Foothill, PSP, short, outages up the hill. So there are some immediate needs. And rather than have SiteLogic go out and give us a bunch of stuff that, we're okay with, Jennifer and SiteLogic are already aware of those high priority projects that we need to get off the ground and which are very important to our community and our district.
Travis, if I might ask, does that include looking at backup energy sources for the foothills?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and so like as Jennifer was stating, the $59,000, when they go through, they're doing an extensive study, right? Instead of just throwing just numbers out there, there's things, like they said, their engineers are going to go look at the viability of putting safe battery storage up at the foothill sites. Right now, we know there's a lot of issues with air quality and air quality not even issuing permits to generators right now. So there's some things where SiteLogic is already forward thinking of how their engineers can look at, getting those sites on possibly backup power if, solar isn't viable, if we can't get a permit for a generator. As everybody knows, in the state of California, it seems like things are changing. It seems day to day, week to week, that we're seeing all these different regulations. So, with SiteLogic going through with their engineers, they're going to come up with a possible solution, whether that's solar, backup generators, or battery power. Already been in discussion of what that's going to look like. It's really up to their engineers to look at the viability of that, which is really important to us because obviously we know that, the sooner we can get on this, the better. And I like the fact that, you know, they have a team ready on standby to start working.
Yeah, and additionally, we will try to leverage some state funding for that as well. Just something that I personally love to do is find free money.
Right.
So,
yeah, it would be absolutely wonderful if we can do some of this stuff to save some power. But what's interesting, what Travis said, you know, talking about the diesel generators, but yet they use diesel generators to supply the Tesla cars to charge their batteries. So
is,
kind of a,
yeah.
Interesting how the state of California works.
Okay.
Yes. Well, part of that AB 848, which you'll hear more and more about, like I said before, Newsom right now, is a lot about electric infrastructure upgrades and how to use energy differently, which includes a lot of electric vehicle charging stations. So they're getting at it a little bit, slowly but surely.
Yeah, just kind of a funny oxymoron there.
Yes, always. Any other questions on the estimated cash flow? And again, this is just an estimate right now, but it gives you an idea.
Very good presentation. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. But one thing I'd like to add for probably Paul and I both is with our limited access to internet in the foothills, is there a way that we can start getting hard copies of these presentations so we're not just following along on the phone?
Yeah, that's my fault. Yeah, and you'll get a hard copy of this one. I know it's very good.
Thank you, Gary.
Yeah. So I have just a bit more of my presentation. I'll go quickly. I'm going to go past this. Go ahead, Brian, if you would. So this is a little test. I wonder if everybody remembers their key takeaways. So no new money is needed. Energy pays for the project. And what's really nice is when you can go to your taxpayers and when you're at the point where you want to ask for a bond and you can say, look at what we've accomplished without one. And it really shows the community that you're being proactive and diligent with, you know, public funds. So we talked about the reduction of operating costs, enhanced reliability, risk, and standardization across the district. Go ahead. Number 18, please. So I don't want to bore you with this. I think it's pretty late. Penny, should I wrap it up?
Yes.
Okay. So let's go ahead and any other questions, any other thing? Let's go ahead and jump to slide 22. So next steps, as we discussed, would be your approval of the letter of agreement tonight, the audit of facilities, our engineering and design builds, recommendations for the staff to review, a board workshop, a contract review and approval and implementation. So with that, unless there's more questions, I will conclude. And thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any more comments or questions?
I just had one question for Jennifer. And Jennifer, in all that, the guaranteed savings will exceed the cost. Has that ever happened, or you'll pay the difference? Is that right?
Yes.
Has that ever happened?
Yes, it has, actually.
How often does that happen?
Well, it's happened only once so far, knock on wood. That was a situation where the inverter did fail. So we cut the district a check. Good fortune was that the inverter manufacturer realized that they had an actual production failure and then reimbursed us. But in the interim, we were able to reimburse the district.
So it happened once in how many years?
33.
Wow.
Yeah. We do a lot of preliminary work.
But that would raise the question to me, why would you not use individual inverters per solar panel so you're not taking down an entire bank of solar panels instead of just one solar panel?
You know, when we do a board workshop, I'll have my solar engineer with us for that, and he can answer all those questions that I'm just not that smart to answer. Solar to me is like magic.
Yeah, it may do with the size of the scope of the project, and it's just not feasible, but thank you.
Sure. Yeah, we'll be happy to address that in our workshop.
Any other comments or questions? Not, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve by Randy Davis.
Motion to approve by Mr. Davis. Is there a second?
Second. Sorry.
Okay, roll call vote. Trustee Davis.
Yes.
Trustee Bloom.
Yes.
Trustee Allison.
Aye.
Trustee Fleury.
Yes.
Trustee Scott.
Yes.
Crawford.
Yes.
Trustee Rasmussen, yes. Motion carries, except yes. Thank you very much, Ms. Butler.
Thank you. I look forward to seeing you all again. Stay safe.
Sure. Mr. Cannon?
I'm looking forward to this day. I'm joining Triplett. You. Oh, okay. Okay. Everybody, I know it's late. I just want to share this announcement. This is Dwayne Triplett, principal at Yuba Feather School. I'm just going to read it to you. He says, the fire exit near Yuba Feather is a bad one. It looks like the school is now in a mandatory evacuation zone. Everything north of LaPorte Road and New York Flat Road is now under mandatory evacuation. We have made contact with all staff that have been evacuated, and they are out. With your permission, I will have the rest of the staff work from home tomorrow. With the power out, there is no way to do a call out to our family. There are many of the Yuba Feather, Foothill, and Marysville Heights families affected by this. So here's a list of the areas I know that are under mandatory evacuation. Quartztown, Challenge, Clipper Mills, Strawberry Valley, Woodley, LaPorte. He'll update everyone sometime tomorrow morning early. He's probably already in bed. And I didn't want the meeting to end without sharing that with everyone.
Mr. Cena, I would mention that Greg Taylor texted me as soon as he got that, and he and three drivers went up to bring down our four buses to have them fixed.
Yeah. Hey, Gary, thanks for that. If people aren't real familiar with that area, that is adjacent to – that is the road adjacent to – Yuba Feather School. That is the road that is just across the road from it. So they're evacuating everything right to Yuba Feather School, it sounds like now.
We'll stay alert and keep you posted as soon as we can.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Cena. Anything else? Good to the talk? Thank you all. Meeting adjourned.